Crypto Parabellum Podcast, episode 9, I think. I don't know. We'll find out afterward. I'm pretty sure it's episode 9. You know, Alan, it's hard for me to know what episode we're on because I think we've re-recorded 2 times.
Yeah, we really need to avoid the re-recordings.
Yeah,
because
the re-record is, ooh.
It's not as natural, I think, the second time. And there was one where we didn't do a second recording, and I think you just tried to like piecemeal it together, and they're not great.
No, not good. That's one of those things that just falls squarely into the category of just suboptimal. And that's why not what we're going for. We're not going for suboptimal here.
No.
But welcome back. We took a week off last week. We were supposed to record, and then Joel had some things go on, and so we decided to push it, and then we had some communication snafu. But here we are. So we roll with who we got. We think we are going to have some guests rolling in the next couple of weeks, so that should be fun. But I think that, Alan, we would be remiss if we didn't start out with crypto doesn't suck for the first time in a while, man. What are you thinking about this?
Yeah, I mean, the last 2 days, what is that, 48 hours now? What comes to mind is that meme that you'll see on crypto Twitter pretty often, where it's like the guy in like pure euphoria, and it's like a green 1% up number there. And the gist of the meme is just like, man, 1% up sure feels good after 80% down, right? And so it's like almost kind of silly. But I mean, crypto is just following traditional markets, which I think is not great. And so I am a little bit cautious here.
Yeah. The interesting part is the S&P is up like 6.5% off the bottom right now, 6.3%. And like Ethereum is only up like 8%. So that's great. But usually when we are in like a sustained trend or something, like crypto is leading heavily. And it's not. And actually, you're starting to see some relative strength out of Bitcoin for the first time in a while. So I don't know, man. There's all those Bitcoin maxis that were out there that were like, the halving's stupid. It's going to be Bitcoin's time to shine. And then, you know, since that happened, I think Bitcoin has actually been a little bit in control.
By the halving, do you mean the merge?
Yeah, that's what I meant. I'm sorry. The merge, which is acting like a halving. That's what my brain has processed it as because it was a supply shock, right? But yeah, if you look at the Ethereum ETH BTC chart since the merge, it's been pretty much down only.
I think we've generally seen that the market goes back and forth. Like Bitcoin is king. Never mind. It's all of these altcoins that are outperforming and back and forth and back and forth. So, I mean, I would say that we haven't really seen Bitcoin be overly strong in a little while now. And so it wouldn't be crazy if it led the story. Now, my interest would then be in everything else. So as Bitcoin's going crazy and everything else is underperforming, usually and you correct me what's wrong, usually what happens after that is Bitcoin chills out, everything else catches up, and then some. Yeah. And so I wouldn't chase the Bitcoin stuff, right? Because you're gonna have a limited upside there. Just find either ETH or an alt that you like, because that will probably catch up and then outperform.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that I have not been doing it because it's been summer and I typically kind of don't trade as much. I just make macro calls, which, by the way, called the bottom in my Telegram room and on Twitter for this latest move, which has been pretty nice. Let me get some nice pub for that. But that's been based purely on standard market. Like, I'm not looking really at Ethereum. I'm not looking really at Bitcoin. I'm looking at the S&P 500. And we bounce exactly where it should for a ton of reasons. And crypto is just kind of following along. So I think, to your point, it's not like there's been some catalyst, but, and this is one of our topics for today, and so this might be a good segue into it. I have noticed, per the Bitcoin and Ethereum conversation, that lately, when there has been news about printing, or you know what Japan's doing, or what's happening with the euro or the pound, or you know, one of the articles that I'll let you introduce here in a second, I'm actually seeing, maybe it's a market maker just fucking with people, but I'm actually seeing like a reactionary bid in Bitcoin for the first time before. Like, people would talk about that before, the Fed is going to print the dollar out of existence, you know, hedge your money with Bitcoin. And it never really showed up to me like that linearly, if that makes sense. And it looks like it's starting to. I should actually just look at those announcement tweets and put them on a Bitcoin chart and see if it's like, oh, hey, on the low time frame chart, there's like a little bit of a rip when they, when the UN says, what did they say?
I think what they said was, please stop raising the rates. You're going to kill us.
yeah.
Which is, you know, like a silly representation of what they actually said. But I like don't think it's that far off the truth. I think like their perception is, hey, there's a lot of like institutional processes that are being strained by the rapid increase of rates. Rates have been zero for a long time. Zero or effectively zero for a long, long time. I actually should have looked up when that started. Maybe you can do so while we're talking about this, but I want to say like my gut is somewhere around 2014, 15, 16 is like when rates basically just became zero and they stayed there. I don't think the intention was to keep them there this long. And now we're feeling the results of that. And it's really, really hard to get off of zero. And not only are we getting off of zero, but we're getting off of zero really, really quickly. It's pretty much every single month except for September, which was skipped, right? Or was it August that was skipped? One of the months, August.
August has a
meeting skipped. It's been what 50 to 75 basis points every single month. And I think people are starting to feel it, especially outside of the US. You see every other currency outside of the dollar getting absolutely hammered. And I tweeted yesterday, but 40% of mortgage dollars in the UK. So this is not 40% of mortgages, but 40% of mortgage dollars, right? So are using interest only adjustable rate ARM mortgages.
What?
And so 40%. Now,
those people fucking stupid?
Well, no. So here's like the caveat to that statement, because it sounds crazy and it sort of is, but interest only adjustable rate ARMs, like let's describe what that is, because adjustable ARMs are maybe like a little bit more well known. That just means that your interest rate is not fixed. And your interest rate can increase or decrease along with standard rates. Rates were low for so long that I believe maybe there was a slight uptick in using ARMs, but the usage of ARMs or adjustable rate mortgages in the US is really low. I looked it up. It's like 18% of mortgages are adjustable rates. Then you have to assume that some people that use adjustable rates can afford to pay it off in cash, and they will do so when the rate gets adjusted, but they were taking advantage of low interest rates. So back to the UK. This is only mortgage dollars. Interest-only loans typically are not given to just anybody. You have to get those through like a private relationship with a bank or a private bank. And so if you have access to one of those loans, you have a lot of capital behind you. So I don't think it's like raise the alarm bells, everything's, you know, going to break. But it is interesting to know that come January, I believe those rates in the UK sort of reset. They have some weird way of doing it. Tons of people who are doing interest only loans, which maybe we should explain what that means. There is a type of loan where you only pay the interest. And so people will use those on homes or vacation homes or investment properties, just to feel the appreciation of the asset, which generally comes over time without having to pay down any of the principal. So your payment's a lot lower. You can cash flow on an investment property in a much easier way, but you are at the mercy of rates. And I think a lot of people got comfortable with rates being zero. They assume rates will be zero forever, and they will come to learn in January that rates are no longer zero.
Yeah.
So all that to be said, I think the interesting point is that crypto got a lot of flack from the world in general when everything went down 50% and a lot of the institutions in crypto failed. Three Arrows Capital, Celsius, Voyager, many other like no name that you've never heard of exchanges like going under, all as a result of a 50% drop. I think it's a bit ironic that those same people that were claiming all of that are now worried about stable traditional systems failing after a 30% drop on the traditional markets. It's sort of like the pot calling the kettle black. Financial markets don't like insane volatility.
Right.
And this is what happens.
Yeah, I agree entirely. That interest rate thing is funny. And so the UN's position on that was, did they lay out as clearly as you just kind of explained that, like, if you continue to do this, what they're projecting the ramifications to be for Europe? Like, did they get into those details?
You know, I'm not sure. It's possible that they did. I think their concern was largely around, like, emerging markets and the impact of interest rates on emerging markets. And I think that there's, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a specific institution that looks out, and I'm saying that with air quotes, for emerging markets. And they're basically the ones raising the flag saying, hey, this could get ugly.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, like, I remember it was the 26th, you know, the pound hit $1.02 or $1.03, depending on what you look at. That is fucking crazy, man. Like, can you imagine? I mean, everything that upsets the apple cart so heavily when the pound is like that, like, not long ago. And back to your question around when it did zero interest start. It started with the 2009 financial crisis.
It never came back up after that? It was just zero.
It says in 2000, it was 2009 until like 2014. And then they started doing it a little bit and then they just dropped it right again. And then they essentially kept net zero. So as much as they could just offset, they would. And then obviously everything got crazy with COVID, but we've been in like essentially a ZIRP, ZIRP is what it's called. That's the zero interest rate policy for like 14 years, which is pretty wild. Yeah, it is a long time, which by the way, just anecdotally, today is my 14 year anniversary. So there you go. I guess when we got married.
Mine's tomorrow.
Oh, is it? Right on, man.
Not 14 years, but mine's tomorrow.
Great minds. Well, when we got married, all of a sudden, interest rates went to zero. So,
it's good luck.
A pretty interesting thing. Yeah.
Hopefully your marriage can survive non-zero interest rates.
No doubt. I feel good about it. Okay. Just, you know, in 2008, the high of the pound in 2008, $2.11.
Wow. And what is it now?
$1.13.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy, dude.
So can you argue that that is good for the dollar? I mean, all of this leaving of other fiat currencies means the dollar's holding strong. So that means the flight is to the dollar, I think.
100%.
And so is the concern. So it wasn't that crazy that 4, 5, 6 months ago, people were concerned about the staying power of the dollar with the Russia-Ukraine conflict. There was talk about oil settlement starting to happen in the yuan rather than the dollar. Does this show that all of that was wrong and that when there is fear, the flight is to the dollar?
That's correct. And not only that, quite frankly, and since this is a crypto podcast, I'll tie this back in. Quite frankly, what I've seen out of the dollar, like I literally have the DXY chart up and I was looking because I was going to say, hey, the dollar's down 4% since, you know,
just listed on FTX yesterday, by the way.
Yeah, which is funny. That should be a market top. You should short that. if the DXY perp got listed on FTX, that probably means too many numbskulls like us are looking at it. But to pull this all back to your question, does that mean that people are raining on the dollar? Yes. And like, it shouldn't even have been a question, right? Like when I was younger, I used to say, you know, if the US wasn't as, I'm not going to say altruistic, but was less imperialistic, or if the US was more imperialistic, Europe would be like the US East after World War II, right? And they weren't. So they're like, hey, we'll help you rebuild. But the way that they rebuilt was by rebuilding the developed world with US dollars as their backing. So in many ways they did. Okay. So in many ways, after World War II, the US's ability to essentially make the dollar part of the developed world and what happened from them with oil, and hey, your loans are now based in the dollar because we're giving you these loans to rebuild your country, et cetera, has really kind of helped me revisit my thesis on crypto. Because I think we all know that we're going to destroy ourselves politically, not the US. I mean, just like governments eventually. Because like, you can't get out of this zero print. The only way you get out of it is by just literally inflating your debts away, which is going to cause tremendous pain and anguish, right? Which is what they're going to have to do. But we should have had this time where people looked at Bitcoin as an alternative. Because right now, even though, you know, Bitcoin's $20,000, it was $70,000. You know, you could be fleeing to Bitcoin, and like countries and institutions could be going like, yeah, we're going to play the dollar game, but like, you're going to fuck us because when you print, it helps you. It doesn't help us. It fucks us. So we're going to go into Bitcoin. And they're still not doing that, Alan. They're still not doing that. They're still rallying to the dollar. And so when I see that, I think to myself, I have this like macro theory on what eventually happens with Bitcoin. Okay. And I do think that will happen. But I thought it would be in the next, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. And I think it's probably more like 20, 25 years. I think it's going to take decades now for Bitcoin to actually take that place in the world economy. And I used to think it would come a lot faster. Like, hell, 6 months ago when everything was going crazy, we're like, let's see what happens. Well, we saw what happened, dude. Literally April of last year, April of 21, DXY was $89. So that, again, that's a basket versus other currencies. So other currencies were valued higher. And then shit started to hit the fan. We went from 89 to 115 in a fucking currency basket. That's a crazy increase in relative strength of the dollar. So you can see people are going, man, fuck holding, you know, the euro or the pound. And those are developed ones, let alone ones in third world countries. They're just like, yeah, we're going to go with the dollar then because we'll ride and die with the USA. And that's what they're going to do.
I suppose that's reassuring, right? Because, you know, maybe it was naive of me, but I did have concern that you sort of had this new pact forming in the East, which would be India, China, Russia. And, you know, those economies, not Russia, but India and China, yeah. Those economies, I don't think you want to ignore for the next 25 years. And so if those countries sort of took the other side and became dollar resistant, right? You're not going to get completely off the dollar, but if you were dollar second rather than dollar first in terms of global trade, I was concerned, but maybe that was silly. And now it certainly seems like, I mean, this strong of a dollar almost gives you unlimited power for now.
It does. And like, I don't see a way that it wouldn't. Not because, I mean, there's so much of like of American culture that has been just like thread throughout the world. Like, think about India for a second. Like, India and China don't love each other, first off. And second off, like, India, everybody speaks English, you know, everybody speaks English. Now, that could be from the British rule and colonization, sure. But like, so much of our work is essentially offshored now, from like a project management or from a system development is offshore. And like, so now we're ingrained there too. China, we're not, but everything that they export comes to us. Without us, they die. So like, we literally are in a situation where India is our main exporter of services and importer. Yeah. So we export services and we import the most from China. So if you really wanted to fuck over the USA, either of those countries, which are the two main population centers in the world, they would be cutting their own throats, right? They would be cutting their own throats. So are you really going to do that? As much as Z, and I don't even know who's in charge of India, or whatever, like would want independence and isolation or to not have their futures tied with the USA. All those guys have gotten super rich hanging on and playing ball with the USA. So why would you change that unless things were absolutely dire? Things are dire in Russia. And what did he do? He went, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to start a war because this is how I am going to change my economy, because wartime is what typically helps out a struggling economy. And so he did. And that's why, like, generally speaking, there's only one risk in this. And that's if Russia decides to use a nuke, because I don't think China's weighing in. I don't think what's Iran going to do? Oh, we side with Russia. Fuck you. No one cares. Right. Like, you know, come on. And then India, obviously not going to. So you essentially have Russia sitting there, and it's whether or not this dude's fucking crazy enough. And by the way, that tweet that Elon sent out about the poll, did you see that? You saw that, right?
But you should give context. So talk about it.
Let me pull it up. Did you send it to me or did I send it to you? You sent it to me, right?
I don't think I sent it to you. I sent you texts, not the tweet.
Oh, yeah. So here, let me pull it up because I don't want to do this an injustice. It might take me a second, but I'll edit it out if it does.
Yeah, well, I'll, why don't I just give color while you're pulling it up to read the exact tweet. So yesterday, Elon decided to, for whatever reason, talk a little bit about what could bring peace to the Ukrainian-Russian war. And so he put out a poll that asked a question and got a ton of flack for it. So actually had Zelensky, which is the president, I think is the word that they use of Ukraine, actually going at him in the replies. And then you also had some Russian diplomat, Dmitry something, I can't remember his last name, sort of also replying. So now you have all these like world leaders arguing on Twitter. Sort of funny, although if it wasn't such a serious topic, but
yeah, if people weren't dying to be hysterical, but like obviously like children and innocents are dying because of this fucking shit. So like, it's hard for to laugh, but it's like, it's funny that this is where we are in the world. So I have it up now. He tweeted yesterday at 11:15 AM, Central Time. Ukraine, Russia peace. And he gives four bullet points. Redo elections of annexed regions under UN supervision. Russia leaves if that is the will of the people. So essentially, all right, you have these Russian areas that they just declare they're now, or Ukrainian areas that Russia just declared as part of their sovereignty. All right, sweep. Let the UN hold elections. If they say we want to be Russian, they're Russian. If they say Russia get the fuck out, then they do. And that's that. The next one. Crimea formerly part of Russia, as it has been since 1783 until Khrushchev's mistake. Okay, I don't really know much about that, but I know it's been a line item in this whole conversation. Third bullet point, water supply to Crimea assured. Fourth bullet point, Ukraine remains neutral, like not, I'm assuming that means not join NATO, right? And then his follow-up was, this is highly likely to be the outcome in the end, just a question of how many die before then. Also worth noting that a possible, albeit unlikely, outcome from this conflict is nuclear war. And so that, I mean, you're kind of looking at it going, is fucking Iran, again, who cares, and China waiting in for these four fucking bullet points?
We talked about this 2 weeks ago, but I was encouraged to see China not overtly back Russia. So when Putin had a speech, say that again?
Yeah, they distanced themselves a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, right? And that's like enough for me. Just that little bit, I think, shows some like maybe we don't want to do this. Also, China's having a ton of economic issues, and so they're probably trying to play it safe. But to your point on this tweet, Elon got a ton of flack for basically being accused of being like pro-Russia in this tweet.
Yeah.
However, I think it's important to remember Elon Musk is the one that delivered Starlink to Ukraine for free to the Ukrainian army. So like, don't pretend that Elon's some like Russian shill. I think, and I believe his interest in this suggestion is saying this is likely the outcome. So what if we got there without any more fighting, right? If this is it's the same argument that I had about FTX and Voyager. If the outcome is going to be FTX is going to buy the Voyager assets either way, don't spend millions of dollars every single month. And in this case, if this is going to be the outcome, don't spend months and months and months fighting and then getting to this outcome.
Yeah, let's just talk about the outcome right now. Right, don't spend thousands of lives.
And then he dropped, he's like, also, you have to remember, one outcome is this peace deal that might involve some or all of these things. The other option is continued escalation, which, as a reminder, involves nuclear war. And so, like, I thought it was a pretty good point. And I have expressed my views on this podcast, several last episodes. I am a fan of giving Russia an out. And I understand that might not be like a super popular opinion, but my interest is in avoiding nuclear warfare. And Russia has to have a way out with some dignity, as much as that sucks, with some dignity.
Oh, it does.
Or they won't
take
it. Or they won't take it. And if they don't take it, the only way it ends is continued escalation.
Right. Because essentially, if that deal was assured, because like, you know, Putin saw that, you know, for sure, Putin saw that tweet. And So now it's going like, all right, he could go back to his people and say, we got back what was rightfully ours, which is not, but let's just say this is him talking, not me. We got back what we said we were going to get out. We now have a sure, you know, Crimea's back where it belongs, which it has been for 1,000 years. And Ukraine isn't joining NATO, which was the whole reason this started to begin with, was there was talks about Ukraine joining NATO. They wanted this land back. And so Putin was like, I'm going now then, before now you do. Yep. Yeah. And so he did.
So additional point that I think would have to be added to that peace deal is the Ukraine withdrawing, or actually what I would say, instead of withdrawing their application to NATO, just denying it. That's like the easiest way to get it done is don't withdraw it, because then you always have, I think, the attack vector of, well, you didn't say no. You didn't say yes fast enough because they withdrew it. But you didn't say no. We denied it. Just say no. And then it's like, well, we answered.
But here's the thing. If Putin's objective was getting back the land that he's annexed, like clearly they're still going, but like they're not pushing that hard towards Kiev, right? Like they are, but not really. Like they wanted these areas, they got it quickly. Whatever. Why are you out of focus right now?
I don't know. I was just wondering.
Anyway, there you're back. If that was it, okay, if that was it, then why can't they join NATO? Right? Because you got what you wanted. At this point, there should be no further conflict.
Yeah, he doesn't want NATO on the border.
He doesn't want NATO on his border. I mean, okay. They are on their border, though. Right?
Who?
Well, what about that piece of Russia that's like in the middle of Poland? What's that called?
I think that is what they consider their buffer. Like the buffer is Ukraine and it's the country north of Ukraine.
I know.
It sort of fucking, like juts into it.
Well, that's
sort
that's,
of like sounds like Russia something. Like the
Kaliningrad.
The
Kaliningrad. So Kaliningrad abuts Poland, right? Okay. And that is like a piece that's Russian territory. So it literally sits in the middle of fucking, you know, between Poland and Lithuania.
Okay, so maybe a more accurate statement is he doesn't want any more of NATO touching the border.
Right? Yeah, like, I guess. I mean, yeah, because like Belarus is the one that's been allied. Yeah, so Belarus, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia. So like, yeah, I guess I thought
all buffers.
I thought, yeah, all right, fair enough. But like, why? Right, would be my question. You know, why? If that's what you wanted.
Hold on. That's easy to answer. Why? Because then you have additional, basically land where NATO can set up defenses like they have done in Poland. So like if you give up, let's say Ukraine does join NATO just for a moment. Now NATO can move all of their defenses from Poland into Ukraine and you're even closer. So all of those long range rockets now just need to be short range rockets I mean, I think that's obvious. You start building air bases and, you know, everything's closer. Okay. Which that's just so you know, why the U.S. doesn't have to worry is because we have all of these, we have a giant moat around the entire country.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I just want to point this out because I thought so, but I didn't want to be wrong. Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia are part of NATO.
Okay.
Which do abut Belarus and Russia. Got it. But still, I get it. Yeah, otherwise, yeah, Finland, Sweden are not, which is wild. I didn't know that. And then, like, you know, whatever. So it doesn't matter. My point is we don't need to belabor this. Like, there's a path to peace. And I don't know. Like, clearly, Elon doesn't care about popularity. Like, he's as popular as he's going to be and will continue to be because he's fucking Elon Musk. And if he was going to be canceled, he'd have been canceled already. So I'm glad that he said it because I don't know if that's the resolution or not, but it's a jumping off point. And every day that goes by, every time you put Putin, that's terrible English, in a corner, he's closer and closer to being like, fuck it, I'm nuking him. You know, and like then potential end of the world's on the table, right? Because you never know.
We should bring it back to crypto, I think, because I think we're wading into territory where it's just like a lot of opinion. And, you know, like if we're honest, you know, I don't know anything about this other than just
true. Opinions. However, the way that I would put it into crypto is like the whole idea behind crypto. The reason why I'm passionate about this, and by the way, I'm working on a project I want to talk to you about, not online, that I want to put out is like the whole idea is this is a nationless economy, which is the only way this sort of shit stops happening. Okay. but it's going to take generations of people onboarding into this way of life. And we're laying the groundwork for that right now. Truly, man. I firmly believe that. I'm not just blowing smoke and being like, what the fuck? I think that there is the best path for human proliferation is through something like crypto.
Well, there's 100% chance of your government that you're sitting listening to us right now, your government, there's 100% chance that it will fail at some point. It will not exist.
No doubt.
Because there's a track record to show that. Every civilization has fallen. And so it's simply just a matter of time. Whether you live through it or, you know, you're long gone when it happens, that's the real question. And so, I mean, I don't disagree with you, but I think you and I do have different views on how realistic that is. I mean, governments will make that so difficult,
yeah,
to all ends. But the point, if we can transition on Elon Musk, I thought that there was a pretty interesting output of the Twitter lawsuit. So Elon Musk is being sued by Twitter because he's wanting to pull out of his acquisition offer. And so during that, his texts, not tweets, but texts related to the Twitter deal have basically become public in the lawsuit. And so we got to sort of see into Elon Musk's phone as a result, or as it pertains to Twitter. And there's a few people in there that the crypto industry might find interesting. One of them being the one and only SBF.
Yeah.
So what the way that they got connected was through, it sounded like someone who was like an advisor to SBF, and he was a friend or an acquaintance of Elon's. The guy texts Elon, hey, there's this guy, this crypto guy that might be interested in going in on your Twitter deal with you. He's got a lot of money. And I'm just paraphrasing here. Elon Musk replies with like, how much is like a lot? Like how much money is a lot of money? And the guy answers with, well, he's got like several billion dollars liquid. Like, is that a lot to you? I don't know. But like, if he really had to, he could push up to like 15 billion with financing. And Elon's like, yeah, sounds good. Like I'll talk to him. And so you get to see SBF's first tweet to Elon. And it's like, hey, Elon, it's SBF. Like, would love to talk about Twitter whenever you get a chance, like that sort of thing. And it's just so funny because, you know, you think about these people as like untouchable, or at least I do. I'll speak for myself. You think that like these people, these billionaires, these incredibly successful and intelligent business people just are unrelatable, right? But then when you get to see their text messages, it's just a couple of guys texting about a potential business deal. So there's a lot more than just SBF in there. There was Jason Calacanis, who's a pretty popular podcaster and you know has plenty of business accolades alongside that as a VC, you know, giving Elon all of these ideas on how to monetize Twitter and telling him that Twitter CEO would be his dream job. And then Elon says like, hey, you're being a little bit too public about this. Please stop. Like, it's just a couple of bros texting back and forth, trying to get a job, you know? So, that came out this week, and I'm sure as people will continue to go through that lawsuit, more and more texts will sort of come out. But there were a few messages, SBF was one of them. His brother was another, and Jack was a third, where Twitter, a blockchain version of Twitter, was talked about with Elon. And he did give that as his plan B. So Jack's opinion, Jack came out in those texts to Elon, and Jack Dorsey's the founder and ex-CEO of Twitter, of course.
Correct,
he said, I left the company because I believe that Twitter can't be a company. That service, Twitter, needs to be an open source protocol for it to actually work. And so I think that he basically said, I left because this can't be a company. It needs to be a protocol. I want to go work on that. And so Elon's own brother also said the same thing. I think Twitter should be blockchain based. And Elon made a few comments about a sort of offhand idea of requiring like a tenth of a Dogecoin to be able to leave a comment or a reply or a tweet. That way there's like some financial burden to spamming nonsense. So
I love that
to say, I think the result from that is like, I don't think the Twitter deal will go through. So none of this matters, but three people and Elon were all talking about this idea of a blockchain based version of Twitter or including blockchain in actual Twitter.
Wasn't that in, I have to go back and find it now, and I'll try to link it in the show notes, and I'll link all this stuff like usual, guys, so you can go in and click through and see this, because I have it up right now. Wasn't SBF's like immediate reply to this was, I like that you're willing to buy it, but let's talk about a decentralized solution. Like, wasn't that his first comment on the subject as it was like rumored that he was going to buy it, or when they made an agreement, like before even this text, his first like public comment on it was, you know, I have this, but I have, if that doesn't go through, and I have an idea for this. So like literally that was the first thing he said.
Yeah. I think what you're talking about, like his own tweets.
Yes.
Yeah. I would say it seems like he backed off that. Like, so he said that on his own Twitter, which of course is like a giant crypto audience. But then when he was texting Elon, he said something like, I'm not going to remember it perfectly, but like, I don't just want to talk with the interest of making this like a blockchain thing and adding a token. Like, I don't want to be the crypto guy in this case. It seemed like he was sensitive to the fact that I don't want to be seen as a crypto guy. I'll provide financing. I think it's cool. We can talk about it, but it's not a requirement to my involvement.
I like it. Well, I mean, that's good for him. That's smart. Cause like the more you marry that shit together, it just helps him get more deals done. Like you get in bed with Elon and, you know, not that SBF has a hard time closing deals to begin with, but that helps. Yeah, I think that's really intriguing because honestly, I think that's right. I think that's where it has to be. And like, quite frankly, this is where, so this project I'm working on, dude, like literally it's human involvement that fucks up every good idea, man. It fucks up every good idea because Twitter, at its like, to Jack's point, there can't be a business behind that. It should be what it is and it should be amazing. And it should be like, if there's 150 fucking developers working on Ethereum because they believe in Ethereum, obviously they're getting paid, but like, there are people out there who would donate time. Like you can literally just be like, hey, these things need to be done. Go work on it. And thousands of people around the world would be like, I would love to be part of the open source development of Twitter. Right. And people would get on board.
I don't think you're wrong. I think that that is possible. I think the hard part of all of that is moderation. And I'm sure there's a million ideas on how to do like crowd-based moderation. But that's like the hard part of any of these social media platforms. Because even so, I think the point to prove that every spinoff of a social platform that is like, hey, we're the free speech version of X, Y, or Z, they always like run for 6 months and then they put in their own moderation policies because they're like, oh, wait, this is actually really hard. The moderation matters. We can't just let anything happen. And then, right, it's like, well, then what's your real value prop?
I agree. And like to Elon's point, whether it's Doge or whatever, like, you know, right now, if you load it up on Doge, you could tweet forever. But, you know, there has to be something that can be done with that. And maybe it's just like reputation based and your tweets have a better chance of being seen based on your reputational value. And like you start at a certain level and the more you spam, it goes down or people vote you down or whatever it may be. But like I would let that you the world where that exists to me would be the best thing that could happen. Because there'd be no censorship conversation. There would just be, this is what it is. And like, go do your own research, right? Like I found this here, go do your own independent research, but people don't do that anymore. Anyway, I know you're up against it here. There's a couple things I just want to quickly like set on the table here for next week. We're not going to talk about them now, but one thing that I thought was intriguing was, I don't know, do you remember that OpenSea employee that was like front running listings?
I do.
Yeah, so this guy, his name, Nathaniel Chastain, former product manager at OpenSea, is currently, you know, essentially in a facing criminal charges because he would know because he was in charge of what was going to be promoted on the website. So he would essentially buy NFTs. They would be listed. The price would go up. He would sell them. So he was front running NFTs. And there is a lawsuit, or, you know, a criminal charge, potentially lawsuits against OpenSea happening. And he wants the term insider trading stricken from the record for various legal reasons that aren't worth getting into. The interesting part, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, is he wants to subpoena OpenSea. And God, but I'd love to see that. Like, I would love to see the inner workings. Because, like, once you subpoena something like OpenSea, you're getting everything, right? Like,
I think it's not hard. Specifically the Slack messages.
Correct. But like, all it takes is one message in there to be like, oh, now we got to see everything because this alludes mm-hmm. to something else. And that's now part of this. So it would start with Slack messages. But like, look, I know what my Slacks were like when I was in a formal world. I know you guys are on Slack as well. So it's like, that's going to lead to everything. And oh my God, would I love to see that. It would be so interesting to get 100% transparency into the operation of OpenSea. Don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be interesting. I sort of like feel from them from the business side of things. Like we are very, very careful about what we talk about because are very aware of the idea that, like you said, all you have to do is have one mention of something in one Slack channel and that one thing opens up gone. The entire Slack channel. Yep.
That's
for,
right.
For years yep. and years. So yep. we're very careful about that.
Good. I hope you have repeat trainings on that. And then the other things, just real quick hitters. We talked two weeks ago, about Voyager, and you had a theory. Tell everybody what happened real quick, Alan, as we close out.
Yeah, so Voyager was upset with SBF/FTX/Alameda for sort of like preempting their bid process with an offer, a public offer. And my point at the time was like, stop playing games. You don't need to spend millions of dollars for the next 3 months to then just accept this offer anyway. Like, just get it over with early. Yep. And I guess I was right and wrong. Voyager did accept an FTX offer, which we last reported that Binance was slightly higher. So it looks like Alameda or FTX or whoever did counter and come up a little bit. But what I want to know and what we'll never know is like, what was the original offer? What is the finished offer? And how much did they spend in between? Because that is the decider of whether it was worth it or not. But I mean, the outcome is as expected. FTX is buying the assets. I believe that they will make them available through FTX. You'll have to create an FTX account. You'll somehow link that with your old Voyager account. You'll be able to claim, I don't know what the price, let's say 60 cents on the dollar, whatever's available. And then they'll have a claim to the rest. And FTX will either get the trading volume, but they're definitely acquiring the user base. It's a good move.
Yeah, it's a great move. Again, showing that Sam knows what he's doing. And yeah, I mean, we'll never know, but I would, as a betting man, I would bet that more money was lost in that hemming and hawing than was gained by pitting Binance and FTX against each other. But we'll never know. That's purely speculative. That's just how the world works. Alan, this is fun. Hopefully we get some guests next week, week after. Joel will be back. And yeah, man, this was good.
Sounds good.
All right, brother. You have a good day. Everybody, let's play us out of here with that 6-6 smooth bass line. Crypto Parabellum Podcast, episode 9, wrapping up Tuesday, October 4th. Crypto to the moon? Maybe. Or not. Let's just not have war. See ya.